This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, Episode 5 for Thursday, April 30th, 2009, Perfect Apologists. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours Greenwich Mean Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Music Store.
So here we are with another Out of Line After Hours. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about tonight. Today's been, I think, one of the most historic days in this auto industry. And, of course, joining us as always is Peter DiLorenzo. And, Peter, we got to get into what your latest topic was on your website, autoextremist.com, talking all about Pontiac.
Yeah, I took a lot of criticism for writing the column. They think I was wallowing in nostalgia, but really it was a tribute to a great American brand that I was intimately involved with at one time in my ad career. And it's just, it was almost, if you go to the reader mail on the site, you'll get an idea of what Pontiac meant to a lot of people. It wasn't just a car brand. It was part of, an inexorable part of the culture in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, ironically, the two best cars Pontiac's done in years, the G8 and the Solstice, are with us today, but now it's all going away.
And we'll get into that later on in the show, too. And, of course, joining us is Jason Vines. Jason, great having you here, as always.
It's a pleasure. And Pontiac relaunched the career of Sally Fields.
Yep.
How so? Explain that to the audience.
In the movie with Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. Smoking the Bandit.
She had been a TV star as Gidget and other things, and she became a movie star from there, and later an Oscar winner, and a great part of our Americana, and I'm sad to see Pontiac go. I think it's right.
Yeah.
I really do think it's right, but it's sad. But this is a monumental change.
Well, we'll get into Pontiac later. We got a lot to talk about Chrysler tonight, one of your old stomping grinds. And also joining us is Robert Farrago from The Truth About Cars. Robert, great having you here.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate it.
Tell us a little about your website. I'm sure everybody watching is pretty much familiar with it, but you started this, what, about 4 or 5 years ago or something?
It was actually 9 years ago.
Nine? Wow.
Yep.
And you cover anything and everything about this auto industry.
Yeah, well, we no holds barred, rants, reviews, editorials, and blogs.
Cool. That's well, you know, tonight we got to start talking about Chrysler because today is the day that, of course, Chrysler is officially filing for bankruptcy. And Jason, I want to start with you on this, but anybody, you know, just jump in as we go along with this. I was stunned to see it was the President of the United States making this announcement, not the Treasury Secretary, not the Presidential Task Force, not somebody else. What's going on here? Why Obama making this announcement?
It's because he listened to Peter DiLorenzo about 3 weeks ago and said, you need to be a cheerleader for this.
For this auto industry. American auto industry.
Absolutely. I didn't vote for him. Probably wouldn't vote for him again. I'm a Republican, but I thought it was his best day in office. I thought he was forceful. I thought he had his you-know-what together. I think he bitch-slapped the investors that haven't come on board while most have. He set a path, I believe, for their recovery. I think this is a do-over for Chrysler. And provided they get through this bankruptcy in the time they're saying, and I hope they're not smoking something, but 30 to 60 days, Chrysler has a do-over and a potentially bright future with Fiat. This is a great day for Chrysler, even though it seems bleak. We've got the plants all closing now, which means bad news for the supplier base. There's going to be a lot more pain coming in the next 60 to 90 days, but there is light at the end of the tunnel that's not a train, potentially.
It's a disgrace. The whole thing is a complete and utter disgrace and a waste of money.
Wait, in terms of the president making the announcement or what, Robert?
No, I assume it doesn't cost us too much to have a presidential announcement. I mean, actually giving Chrysler another, what, $8 billion? That'll bring us up to $12 billion It's ridiculous. Chrysler needs to go away. It's a zombie automaker that has no credibility in the marketplace. It needs to disappear now so that others may live.
Should AIG and Bank of America and Wells Fargo and all those go under too?
Nothing to do with it.
No, it has everything to do with it. We prop them up without any strings attached. Do you want to get rid of our manufacturing base in this company, in this country, and turn into Britain? Or do you want to retain some jobs, some manufacturing prowess, some basis of the Midwest, and potential for national security? Or do you want to let it all drop down and we become McDonald's workers?
Stop waving the flag. It's unbecoming to.
I'll wave the flag because I'm an American.
To wrap Chrysler in the flag is not just wrong. It's misguided on a very deep philosophical level. America is about survival of the fittest, capitalism, free markets. It's not about propping up an automaker that couldn't see that it was going under 20 years ago. It should have changed. It's over. It's done. It's time to stick the fork in that automaker.
Okay, stay consistent. What about all the banks and AIG? Do you let them fall?
Are you an expert on banks?
No. Do you let them fall?
I'm
following your line of reasoning that those that are American companies, and some not quite so American, they were in dire straits. They got a federal infusion of money with no strings attached. If we follow your line of reasoning, we follow the pure capitalism model and let them go under.
What is it with you guys and Wall Street?
What are you guys? You sound like Ross Perot. You guys.
Well, tell me. I'm not looking at you, but there are three of you who are apologists for Detroit and have been for years. Absolute years. These companies have been so poorly run, they're bankrupt. Are you going to turn that around with my tax money? You think that's going to happen? You really think that's going to happen?
Yeah, no, you're right. We have been apologists for Detroit. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you one thing, too, is that, you know, one of the reasons they're being supported by the government now is plain and simple. The whole world economy collapsed. If you could wave a magic wand and just go back to 2007, you know, these guys would still not be in front of the government.
When was the last time Chrysler made a profit, or General Motors or Ford? When was the last time those companies made a profit? Forget about the economic meltdown.
Okay.
When have these companies been viable?
Chrysler made a profit, I know, in 2004, about $2.1 billion.
And what happened to that money?
Well, I'll tell you what happened to that money.
It went to Stuttgart.
But it also supported communities. It supported charities, it paid income taxes and supported communities, and it was pumped back into product development.
So what happened to where are the products? Where are the products people want to buy? Look at Chrysler's sales figures. They're in the toilet.
And you know who else is swishing around in that toilet? Toyota and Nissan.
Toyota outsells Chrysler what? 10
doesn't
to
matter
one?
Who outsells who. Toyota's losing money on your model now. Screw Toyota. Screw Nissan.
Absolutely. Hey, if they go belly up, if they can't make a profit, then why should we, the taxpayer, pay for failed companies?
Because
if
we don't pay for failed companies that have some type of economic base, there won't be any jobs. And we're seeing
over half the cars that are sold in America are not made in Detroit or by Detroit automakers. And they are made in this country.
They have high content of U.S. parts. I mean, we have a wonderful trade agreement with Canada. We have a fabulous trade agreement with Mexico, and we share among the three countries, and it works. The fact is, we're in a global economic meltdown where everybody's losing money.
It's an excuse for a loser to hang a hat on, and you're doing just that for them.
Well, you know, here's one other thing to look at, though, Robert. You know, one of the things that, and I've been a critic of these guys, too. But, you know, let's face it, they got locked into these legacy costs that 30, 40 years ago they agreed to wages and benefits and pensions and health care when everyone thought there's always going to be a General Motors and a Ford and a Chrysler, and they're always going to make billions of dollars in money.
Everyone thought there was going to be a General Motors. People have been sounding the alarm for 40 years on that company.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's only until fairly recent times that it really got to be bad. But saying is that
2005, they were flirting with bankruptcy. They should have gone down then.
Okay, but I understand your point of view, but it's immaterial. The government's into these companies for tens of billions of dollars now. So even if
and it's gone. Where's it, you think we're ever going to get it back?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think we're going to get that money back from GM and Chrysler?
Absolutely. It happened with Chrysler in 1980.
Robert,
they paid it off early.
Robert,
the government made a profit off it.
Robert, how many people do you employ in your business?
Directly?
Yeah.
About 36.
On
a freelance basis.
On this website, and what's the payroll taxes you pay and so forth?
You're going to make a point. Can you cut to the chase? I mean, do you want me to get out my books and hand them over? I'm not a publicly traded company. I don't have to answer to you or the government. They do.
If we lose, here's my point. If we lose our manufacturing base, communities around the United States will be hurt. We're already seeing the impact of this.
They're industry. Already
Wait
hurt.
A minute. Let me finish, years. Okay? I'll say I'm done, and I won't speak too long. If we allow our manufacturing base to go, communities around this country are being hurt. We're seeing what the demise of the auto industry is doing to the publishing industry as one of the major advertisers. It's hitting communities in every aspect, and these are 6 million jobs across this country, 6 million that are impacted by this industry. Sometimes they're little screw makers in some place in Indiana that don't know they make a part. The people don't know they make a part for a tier two or tier one supplier. We have to take care of our country. That's for economic reasons, and I'm 15 seconds from done. The final thing, and Peter's heard me talk about this, and he's talked about it himself. This industry helped save this world in World War II, period. It's important.
You haven't said the word done yet.
Oh, sorry. Hey, sorry, buddy. I'm done. I ran out of gas.
These are the same old excuses for incompetence that I've heard now for 4 or 5 years. I have been sounding the alarm on this. They could have themselves turned this around. Opening the door for government control over a major industry is not a way to save an industry. That's very good way to destroy it. But I'm not really that worried because we had 40% overcapacity going into this situation. If Chrysler went away, practically nothing would happen in terms of helping anyone else because it needs to go away. I mean,
but it's not going to go away. Come on. I mean, get real. I understand the point.
It's not going to go away. Why? Because my tax money is going to support it for how many years and how many billions? Where are you, John McElroy, going to draw the line? When are you going to say enough is enough? When?
Well, yeah,
how much money?
Robert, I will draw the line at some point. But I remember, because I was there through 1979 and 1980, when Chrysler went to the government the first time and got $1.5 billion guarantee.
And where did it lead us? Where are we now?
Wait, this isn't fastball. Or whatever it is, hardball. Come on, let him talk.
Rapid fire. But in any case, Chrysler paid off the government years early. The government made a profit off the guarantees that it made for those loans. And I think we're going to see absolutely the same thing happen again. And here's why I say that. They have taken so much capacity out. They have gotten rid of most of their legacy costs. When the market comes back, and it is going to come back, they are going to make so much money. I'm predicting that between 2012 and 2015, and I'll go on the record right now, GM, Ford, and Chrysler will go on to report all-time record profits.
120 days from now, there may not be a Chrysler. If they can't get their stuff sorted out in bankruptcy court in that time, they will be liquidated.
Yeah, but what are they going to get sorted out? Look, they got the unions on board. They've got their major banks on board. There's a few hedge fund holdouts. And I mean, listen to
the hedge fund holdouts. Those are people who have invested their money like you invest your money. They deserve to get as much return as they can for their money.
There's a risk with every investment. And
the government
can't
just come in and change the rules. It can, but that's not the country I want to live in.
Well, the country you lived in done changed when the market collapsed last year.
We're going to throw out the principles that made us great? That's how we react to the situation?
I'm calling a timeout because I'm going to say something that 3 or 4 years ago I never thought I'd say. I want to hear from Peter DiLorenzo. What do you think?
I really got nothing.
Nothing on this one, huh?
No.
Okay. Well,
come on, Peter. Come on. Stand up for Detroit. You've been doing it for so long.
Robert, you've pandered your whole life around my website. You've ripped me off from the beginning, and I'm frankly really annoyed that I have to sit here and listen to you. So I think we better just move on to another subject because I got nothing. After all, you've already written me off as an apologist for the Detroit, so frankly, I don't know why you're even on the show still, because you've written us off from the beginning, so good luck with it.
Well, Peter, you have been a clarion voice on the web, and you have blazed a trail which TTAC has followed. So I respect your work, but I don't respect my work,
Robert. You spend half your born days writing columns about how I'm an asshole. So it's just like you can say whatever you want to say. I don't read your site. I don't go to TTAC. I hear from people who tell me, oh, did you see what Farrago's saying about you this week? You know, Robert, I don't give a shit what you think. I don't go to your site. I don't care what you say. So, you know, here we are.
Well, this is the level of discourse that you're engaged in, Peter. Thank you for at least clarifying that for the people.
Let's not talk about discourse.
Hey, let's go on for stuff that I think the audience is going to be involved in. And Robert, don't give up. Keep coming back on this. I like it, actually. But I want to get on to the new reality, and I understand your philosophical opposition to the government stepping in, but it already stepped in. And now I want to talk about, where's this going to go from here? You don't think it's going to be able to come out of this bankruptcy. I do, and guess what? So does Fiat. So here, I'll throw a question to you.
Well, why doesn't Fiat put some money down if it believes so much?
Oh, they will. They will. They only get 20%.
They said they won't. Sergio Marchionne said he specifically categorically said he wouldn't put a dime into the company.
He said that if the need was there and it was a good investment going forward, he would.
Well, then if it's not a good investment for him, why is it a good investment for my tax?
Did you hear what I just said? He specifically said they went into this deal saying, we're not going to put cash up front. We're going to share technology. And if there is a need, he was pressed upon it for them to inject some cash for the right reasons, he would.
Don't think there's a need to inject cash? They're taking $8 billion from my back pocket.
No, they're not taking anything. They're helping a company come out better. And I'll bet you dinner that a year and a half from now that people are looking at this as a bold move that's working.
You, a year and a half ago, you said they weren't going into bankruptcy.
Yeah, well, a year and a half ago, nobody knew the world economy was going to collapse. But
a year and a half ago, we knew they were going tango uniform. I've predicted this for, 5 years now? I mean, this is something, and I'm no genius. Thank you, Peter. I'm no genius. This is something, they're taking less money than they spend. How are they going to make a profit on building small cars in America?
Because the price of small cars in America is going to go up. This is what America's got to wake up to. The price of small cars is going to go up easy, $5,000 fast. And, you know, the example I always like to use is compare a Ford Focus in the United States with a Ford Focus in Europe. I know they're totally different platforms, totally different cars. The point being is that the fully loaded base American Focus is $5,000 cheaper than the European Ford Focus. And go through just about any lineup of any brand and make the comparison. Why does Europe make money on small cars? Because they charge a whole lot more money for it. And that's how we're going to make money on small cars in this country.
So by stiffing the consumer?
Well, stiffing them? No, the consumer's going to have to pay for value. Look.
What the consumer will buy the best car for their needs at the cheapest possible price. That's what they've been doing for the last 40, 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. But in this country, in the United States, passenger cars have been subsidized from the profits of trucks and SUVs. And as the truck and SUV market goes down, it's real obvious these companies
aren't. Tell that to Toyota and Honda and Nissan. Are you telling me they've been subsidizing their passenger cars with truck sales?
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
Let's talk about International Trade 101. They've been doing it by dumping. I mean, clearly, they've been screwing their home markets and dumping products here for 20 years.
Not to mention Toyota's lived their profits all from crossovers and SUVs. They don't make a dime on their Prius. It's all on their crossovers and SUVs.
And they got subsidy from the government to help develop it, which we learned from Jim Press one time and not the other.
You guys are laughing, but you weren't I find it incredible, frankly incredible, that you have this bunker Detroit, fortress Detroit mentality that says Detroit good, transplants the other guys, the foreigners bad. You know, it's not a conspiracy against Detroit.
No,
it's
no.
Detroit's conspiracy against itself.
No, you got the formula wrong, Robert. The formula is Detroit is bad and imports is good. And that's the formula you adhere to, and that's fine.
I work for Nissan. I work for Nissan, and I'm proud of my days at Nissan. But they got bailouts under the table. And I am very proud of this community. And I will be an apologist if that's what you call it. I didn't grow up in Detroit, but I love this city. I love the generosity of the city. I work for a nonprofit now that feeds hungry people. And even in these economic times, the worst, we got Katrina every frickin' day in this city. We still have individuals that are giving money because they give a damn. I believe in this industry. I'll go back to the historical that helped save, not this country, that helped save this world from the Japanese and the Germans. And so when I went to work for Nissan, I asked my dad, who was at Iwo Jima, if it was okay, and he said it's okay because we've got to move on in the world. But this industry helped build the middle class in this country, and that's a wonderful thing. And the middle class in this country is what sets us apart from France and Iran. And I'm going to defend that to the last damn day of my life. And yes, they've made mistakes. Each company's making mistakes, including Toyota. And I have friends at Toyota. Irv Miller is one of my good friends in the PR world. We've all made mistakes. But had Toyota been losing money in November, the U.S. congressman wouldn't have been beating the shit out of the Detroit automakers because they saw this was a total global meltdown. So I am proud of this industry. I am proud of this community. I'm proud of this country. And I want to help out any way we can. And that's why today this Republican who never voted for Obama and was fearful of him is cheering this president on and is saying that Rush Limbaugh is a complete asswipe for hoping this president fails because I hope this president wins.
Why does it have to be done with my tax money? Explain to me that again.
You know what?
Because
it's my tax money too.
No. You willingly do it, but there are 73% of Americans said they did not want any more bailout money going to Detroit. Americans from coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, they said they didn't want the government to spend the money on this.
And do
now,
we know
are
why?
They, are they because they hate you?
No.
Because they hate Detroit? What? Because they know it's not fair.
No, Robert, I think you're wrong. I think they hate Detroit.
That why? What do you mean they hate Detroit? They don't care one way or the
no,
other.
No, they do
about
hate
Detroit.
It. Yeah. No, they hate.
They
our,
hate Detroit.
They
and
hate
you,
Detroit. They hate the
you
big
guys
three.
Are paranoid.
No,
to the
no,
last
no, no.
I've had
Robert,
people tell
Robert,
me
I hear it every week. I hear it
from
when
who?
I go around
Peter.
The country. I do it in interviews.
Well, people say I hate Detroit.
Yeah, they hate Detroit for some reason. I don't know. We killed their puppy when they were 8, and they remember it. I don't know what it is.
Maybe it
but I go
to
the West Coast,
the
and it's just
maybe
like Detroit. I mean, do they even build
I
cars?
I saw it in Washington
cares?
When I went there with Tim Lilliatt of Dura. We heard it from the congressman directly. This is payback time, and we're going, what for?
Listen, the American consumer, the average American that you are wrapping yourself in the flag to defend is a very generous, open-minded, fair, and concerned individual. For you to paint them as Detroit haters is to do them the disservice that you're accusing me of.
Well, you know, look, I'm one of those Americans, too. We're all one of those Americans, too. But I'm telling you, man, I've heard it for not.
You're living in a bubble, McElroy. You don't get. The people you. It's just like the Detroit executives themselves, because all the people you see and talk to have a certain perspective.
This guy's classic. This guy is.
No. Let him go.
No. But this guy is everything. This is like the New York media and the L.A. media come together in a seething cauldron of incompetence and irrelevance.
That's it? That's the best you got?
Oh, Robert, I'm sure you'll go on your website later and you know, do your usual dance on my head and all that. But you know what? People really don't give a shit what you say. I know you think they do, but most people don't. And frankly, we all travel a lot. We get out of this town. We're well aware of the perspective out there. We're well aware that most of the country, they hate Detroit. We hear it all the time.
I heard it from my little brother in Des Moines. And my brother in Texas during...
Say what?
During,
I hate Detroit? They got T-shirts?
No.
They say what?
No, during Planegate, going, gosh, you guys, how stupid are you auto industry guys sending planes to Washington? And so what we did is we made flying a corporate jet a bad thing. And look what's happened to the private jet industry. They've lost 60 or 70,000 jobs.
They were complaining because the executives are swanning around totally detached from the average person, which is them, which is the
combine. I've been in this industry, and I see the way executives travel and the hours that they work.
Fraga's a champion for the average person? Jesus, where's that coming from? God, this guy, come on. What the hell? You make this shit up, or you work on this, or you go to school to be like this? God, you just, I was on CNBC with this guy, and here are the New York anchors, and he was talking about, auto shows are irrelevant. They're not going to have them anymore. They shouldn't. It's a waste of money. And even the New York anchors were sitting there, what are you talking about? We like our auto show. And,
I don't know what your deal is, Robert, but
it's too bad that you have your little acolytes on your site because, you're making them irrelevant, too, whenever you open your mouth.
Peter, you insult me. You make yourself look bad.
Oh, shit. No, you know what? No, I'm already bad. Remember, I'm an apologist. I'm irrelevant. I'm an asshole. I've had people send me what you write about me on my site, so I don't really give a shit. But I can assure you that I have a higher value in this discussion nationally than you ever will, and that's fine with me. And if you don't like it and it bugs you, and I know it does, God, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
And Robert, you've come on this show to insult all of us.
I have come on this show to give you guys what you haven't had in a long
time.
Which is
and that's even more condescending that, calling us an apologist.
Let me finish my sentence.
Go ahead, finish it.
You're living in a world where there is a great consensus of opinion about what Detroit is, what automakers are, and how they fit into society in general. If someone like Peter DiLorenzo comes in here and insults me personally, which is prerogative. But why don't you allow comments on your site, Peter? Why don't you allow a dialogue? This is what Detroit has been missing. It has been missing a dialogue with its customers. Those customers that are angry at Detroit.
I don't have customers, Robert. I don't charge for what I write. People can either come or they can't. But you know what? I don't allow comments because, frankly, every comment box I've seen has dissolved into a pile of worthless crap. We're not interested. You know what? If people have 32 years of experience in this business and that and my perspective, I might want to listen to them. But most people don't.
So
I don't really give a shit, Robert. If you want to provide perspective on the opposite enemy, you can do it on your site. I'm not going to have comments on our site, and we never will. That's the way it is. I don't really give a shit. You think discussion's important on your site and the give and take? I don't.
And let me get personal. When I left Chrysler, I quit, and you put out a report on me that I got fired. You said you had two great sources. And I went to you and I said, no, you're wrong. I actually went on your show. But you continued that theme.
No, I didn't. When I allowed you the chance to respond freely, both in the comments box and a free editorial and in a podcast, I was able to offer you a platform. This is what a dialogue is, guys.
Yeah, but you went out with that. It took a while for us to get this done. It was about 2 or 3 months. You still went out with that story without even ever calling me. And I was probably, not to blow smoke up my own ass, probably the most accessible PR guy in the industry at the level I was at. You could have just called me and I would have told you. No, that's wrong.
But, gentlemen, when did this become a pissing match?
I think when you first opened your mouth.
I'm done. We're out of here. You know what? I can't.
We're not. We're here. We're live.
Yeah, we're live. Go ahead, Robert.
You're live. I'm not going to have a discussion with people who are going to make it so personal. If you want to
make it so personal, Robert, you have made it personal against me week after week after week, and now here you are getting it. You just can't take it.
No. Listen, gentlemen, are we here to talk about Detroit or about a TTAC auto extremist and Jason Vines and auto? Do you guys want to have a genuine debate about the issues that involve billions of tax dollars, hundreds of thousands of people, or do you want to get into a personal pissing match about about who's got the higher level of journalistic integrity?
Robert, I don't mind talking. We're not here to talk about Detroit. We talk about the auto industry, and we take a very global look at it, too. All of us have traveled the world over. A number of us have worked for foreign car companies. A number of us, me included, grew up outside of this country. We bring a very global viewpoint to it. So I don't mind talking about the auto industry one iota. We don't have to talk about TTAC or any of that stuff. But you got us going on this whole thing, and I'm actually glad you brought up the topic. It's a good topic. But it's over with, man. I mean, the government's up to its eyeballs in this industry right now. And whether you like the fact or not that your taxpayer money is in it, it's in it. So how are we going to deal with it? I want to talk about where we go forward and where we think it's going to go forward, rather than arguing about is it right that the government should put in money. It doesn't matter. It already put it in. Let's talk about where it's going from here.
It doesn't matter? Is that what you just said? It doesn't matter that the federal government is now have a huge intervention in a publicly owned company? Doesn't matter to you at all?
It doesn't matter in the sense that it's
philosophically
done.
You're okay with that?
No, what he's saying is that that was in the first quarter. We're now in the third quarter of a basketball game. How do we win this thing? How do we win it?
Right.
And how do we win it for the American?
What if you can't win it?
Wait a minute. Once again, this isn't hardball. How do we win it for the American taxpayers, which we're all American taxpayers? How do we win it for the companies? How do we win it for the government? How do we win it for communities that depend on this industries and the supplier industries and the second and third tier and the little cafes that serve the breakfasts to these workers? How do we make this win? Period. I'm done.
Do you want me to answer that? Because I have my own answer. But I'm interested in your practical point of view.
I don't want to get into the philosophy of it because, like I said,
we'll move on. How do you get a company with a culture like General Motors, a culture of non-accountability? How do you get a company that is competing warring fiefdoms? How do you turn a company that's made lousy products, some good ones, but a lot of lousy products that have alienated their customers like Detroit, like Chrysler and GM, and in fact Ford, how do you get those companies on the public dime to completely change their nature in order to make a profit?
See, now you're asking some good questions. So I'm going to throw it right back to you. How do you change that culture?
You can't.
Oh, come on.
Oh, bullshit.
Come on.
Have you ever worked at a car company, Robert? Have you ever sold cars?
Yes.
Where?
Where?
Where and when?
Well, let me ask you. I'll answer that after you ask.
Well, I think everybody knows.
I will. I'll answer it.
All right, answer it.
Well, I sold BMWs in Bracknell, Berkshire, in England.
For how long?
About a year and a half.
Okay, so you have a year and a half in the industry.
Wait a minute.
Not to scoff at. I'm not saying that. I've worked at Ford. I've worked at General. Excuse me. Oops.
Not yet. Yeah, you haven't worked there yet,
Jason. I worked
at
Nissan, and I saw a very broken Nissan that later became good. I started at Chrysler. I saw a great Chrysler come back. I saw two great Chrysler comebacks. I've seen hardworking, smart people that make breakthroughs in innovation that people give credit to the Japanese or Germans often, like the catalytic converter. People that work hard every day that aren't a bunch of Neanderthal retards that you think they are.
No, don't put words in my mouth.
I didn't put words in your mouth. I said what I think you think they are. I put words in my mouth. These are people that are working every day on the cutting edge to try to get breakthroughs. I've seen it at General Motors. I've never worked at General Motors. I have a lot of friends there. These are scientists at General Motors that have made massive breakthroughs, probably more breakthroughs in the auto industry from an anti-pollution and fuel economy standpoint than any company on the face of the earth.
And they've
seen,
go
wait, wait, I've and seen Chrysler bankrupt. Make some pretty damn good breakthroughs too, including one of the neatest vehicles in the
Except
history. Of the industry called the minivan, which moved a lot of people safely at a great fuel economy for what they did. I've seen Ford Motor Company that right now is kicking some major butt. They're only losing $1.4 billion, but they've got some really damn good products out there And by the way, all these companies help our military and so forth through the years. And I've worked in a Japanese company that was just screwing up and finally got good and is kind of waffling again. I've seen a Toyota that's really done some dumb things lately as they were flooding the market with large gas-guzzling vehicles.
And losing big money.
Yeah, so when you say these people are don't get it and their cultures, I've seen these cultures and they're pretty good cultures. Yeah.
They're failures. The companies have gone bankrupt. They are bankrupt companies.
And Nissan. They
are ipso facto failures.
Nissan in 1990.
Whether they become success is a different story. Admit it. They created their own failure and now they're in it.
Nissan in 1998 was bankrupt, beyond bankrupt by our standards. They were propped
up. They didn't file for bankruptcy.
Wait a minute. I do believe I have a little bit of standing here on this issue. They were beyond bankrupt and got a under-the-table loan from the Japanese government to remain solvent until Renault bought them. They were gone, period. We have a Toyota right now that if Toyota continues with its losses, the bank of Toyota will be depleted of its funds sooner or later. We have a Nissan Renault that's not doing too well. We have a Fiat, by the way. That's just
Whose
buying into Chrysler that is losing
Chrysler
money.
Where they are? Whose fault is it that Chrysler and GM are where they are now?
Wait, can you address what I just mentioned on these Japanese?
What, that these are great people? That the Japanese are cheating? What are you trying to say exactly?
I'm telling you facts that they've been in dire straits in the past, and you paint them as if.
And so has I'm not painting. What am I painting them as? I'm painting them as profitable companies.
No,
they're
right?
not.
They're not.
Come on,
they're not. They're not profitable, and yet you keep, every time the conversation goes back, these guys should be allowed to die in the U.S. because they're no good at what they do, but yet their counterparts from Asia and from Europe, by the way, they're all losing money right now.
It doesn't mean, look, the companies themselves, you're right, there is an automotive downturn, right? Okay, obviously. And yes, everybody's getting whacked across the board, but during this downturn, Chrysler and GM's market share has gone down. That's because people are turning away from those automakers in droves. And it isn't TTAC's fault. It isn't the media's fault. It's their own damn fault.
Yeah, but Robert, explain me this then. How come General Motors can do so well in Latin America and Ford do so well in Latin America and in China and Ford's kicking ass in Europe right now? Doesn't that tell you something? How can they do so well outside of this country, but when it comes to this country, everything's upside down for them?
You tell me. I have my
ideas. Oh, I'll tell you exactly why. America is different. America is where they've built up all these legacy costs. America is where you've got the EPA on one hand saying you got to get better fuel economy.
No, it's not their fault. Are you saying to
me? No. I'm not.
Because
I agree with you.
Other companies are competing. They're feeding. Whether you say okay, they may not be profitable this quarter, the last quarter, but these are not companies that are in. Technically, GM owes $93 billion.
Robert, you haven't answered my question. Why can they do so well in Europe, Latin America, and the Asia-Pacific area, and they can't do well in America? These are the same people running these companies, the very same people. And for decades, this has been true. And that ought to tell you there's something going on in America that is not just the auto industry that's going down. You look all around you. We're losing manufacturing left, right, and backwards in every kind of industry. And yes, there are some stellar examples out there like Boeing and Caterpillar and the like. But guess what? America has been losing manufacturing, not just Detroit.
Why won't these companies and you who cover them understand that it is their that they have made these mistakes for decades, and these are just the chickens coming home to roost?
But
this
again,
is what's happening. Now, it's not – look, if they signed a deal with the unions that made their labor costs aren't even really an issue.
Yeah, they are.
No, not in terms of the competitiveness.
Yes, they are. You don't have your facts right here. You don't have your facts right because you're buying the union line.
What's the
line.
Percentage of labor cost of a car made by Chrysler, General Motors, Toyota in the United States or a car sold in the United States? What is the percentage of that car's cost?
I'm glad you raised this issue because here's where I'm going to correct you. In the U.S. auto industry today, and this is pretty much true globally, suppliers supply 70 to 75% of the value of a car.
Are you going to answer my question?
I'm answering it.
Yeah.
I'm answering it.
You're saying it's 25%?
Suppliers supply 70%.
You're saying 25% of the cost is labor.
Let him answer your question. He was in the process.
Ergo, the car companies, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, really only control 25% of the cost of a car. They're buying the rest of it from suppliers. And you're buying into the UAW line that says, oh, you know, union labor only accounts for 10% of the cost. All they're talking about is assembly labor cost on 30% of the car. 75 to 70% of that labor cost, they're not even counting. There's a lot of labor cost that is not counted in that at all. So when the union says, oh, we're only 10% of the car, no, they are 10% of 30% of the value of the car. So really, one-third of the cost that the big three have got to deal with is labor cost.
If you cut the cost of a Chrysler car by a third, it would still fail in the marketplace.
Yes, it would. No, I agree with you. There's a lot that I actually agree with you on. There's no question that the big three dug themselves into the hole that they're in right now.
Oh,
but guess what?
God.
They had a lot of help along the way. They had a lot of help from their unions, and they had a lot of help from their government.
So it's all tangled up, right? The unions, the
Well, what I'm saying is, look, how come these car companies, these GM, Ford, and Chryslers, or let's say really Ford and GM, how come they can make money and come out with kick-ass products outside of the United States? And conversely, how come companies that we've been holding up as stellar examples of how to do things like Toyota and Honda losing their asses right now? They're losing big money. In fact, I'm stunned at how Toyota has gone from the most profitable car company in the world. I think it made $10 billion net profit last year.
Not only that, they had a $60 billion war chest. At one point, like 3 years ago.
Toyota has less cash than Ford right now.
Yeah, then it was
less
30.
Less cash than Ford.
In 15 months.
Right. And don't get me wrong.
Do you think Toyota's
going to
go bankrupt?
I admire Toyota. And, boy, if I ever had to go to work for a car company, I'd want to go to work for Honda. I like their whole attitude. I'm just using these as an example right now. I'm not trying to trash
them. What do you think of Chrysler? What do you think of General Motors' attitude then? What do you think of their attitude? Do you like it?
Listen.
Do you like their attitude that they have had towards their customers, towards their brands, do you actually like General Motors with the way they do business?
No, I don't. I'm with you on that one.
What about Chrysler? Jason Vines there. Look him in the eye and tell him you don't like the way Chrysler's doing business either.
Well, you know, look, Chrysler hasn't been the master of its own destiny since they signed up with Daimler. But all I'm saying
is, whose fault is that? Is that my fault? I'm a taxpayer. Now I got to pay for their mistakes.
Well, you know, if you're a shareholder
in
Toyota, do you like what Toyota's doing right now?
I don't give a damn what Toyota's doing because I don't have to pay for their mistakes. I don't have to reach into my pocket and pay for them. I don't have to mortgage my children's future to pay for an automaker that can't make a profit.
Then we come back to the whole thing with what about the banks being bailed out? What about AIG?
Oh, here we go again with the banks. No, the banks shouldn't be bailed out either. The banks should not be bailed out either. I am not inconsistent on this.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make that point. You finally said that you're against bailing out the financial industry too.
Listen, the federal government should make sure that the health of our banking system is good through regulation. That's what got us out. You can't simply say that it's okay to bail out Detroit because someone bailed out the banks. That's not a compelling argument to anyone but your little circle of apologists.
No, but it's okay for you. Let's flip that around. It's okay for you to say just because they bailed out Detroit, they should bail out the banks with no strings attached. So, but we keep going back to you saying,
banks.
Oh, that was okay, and you don't want to answer the question.
When did I say that they should bail out the banks? I'm sorry.
No, wait.
Is anyone listening to me over there?
No,
I never said they should bail out
the
banks.
We're listening to you over here. Do you think it was right to bail out the banks with no strings attached, basically?
No, I don't think they should have bailed out the banks in the first place. Never mind strings attached. That's just
okay,
making...
so we should have let the banking industry go down and the car industry go down. And we can move in with Osama bin Laden in a cave and eat grass and get on a kidney dialysis machine. I'm fine with that. I'm good.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want everybody to live with Osama bin Laden in a cave and eat grass. That is exactly my position. Thank you for characterizing it so well. I
appreciate
that.
Excellent. That's what I do for a living. Excellent. We're done.
I couldn't come up with exactly where I stood, but now I know. Thanks to your summation of my point of view. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. It was free.
Yeah, see, and that's the great thing. It didn't even cost me any tax money. You're right.
Perfect.
It's an amazingly good thing. You know, let me characterize your point of view then, if we're going to be busy doing that, okay? If you're going to characterize mine, allow me the luxury of saying where I think you are coming from.
Okay.
All right. you are looking at an industry that you have been participating in and you love.
Yes, that's
and
good.
That's a good thing to love. And it's to love something, to love the people you work with. And you have worked with some smart, intelligent, dedicated, focused people. But the system that you are in, that you in fact are a part of and have enabled, is broken and has been broken for years. And you need to wake up to that fact, because if you don't, it's gonna bite you in the ass one way or the other.
Well, but again, Robert, I keep coming back to this. How come virtually every car company in the world is losing money right now and losing money big time? And how come
some are losing
Ford,
more than others?
And how come
some
Ford
are losing more? But
and
they
how
were going
come Ford
bankrupt
and General
already.
Motors do they, well
how many,
outside
how much
of this
money
country?
Did General Motors and Chrysler have, did they owe before this economic tsunami hit? How bad off were they before this all happened?
How come Ford Motor Company 2 years ago made $1 billion net profit in Brazil? How come Ford Motor Company a year ago made $1 billion net profit in Europe? How come General Motors made $700 million in the Asia Pacific region? These are the same guys running the company. The very same guys.
No, how come, just turn it around. How come the North American market, they went from a 60% share of or more of the United States domestic market to less because the other guys were cheating?
No. Because we opened the market up to anybody who wants to come in, and I'm totally in favor of that. And guess what? When you get into fractions, everything's got to add up to 100%. When you start dividing up the pie, it's all got to be 100%. And guess what? When you bring a car into this country, it is going to get sold. And it may have to get discounted, but they don't disassemble it at the end of the year and send the parts back to the supplier. Everybody that we let in, and when we let the Chinese in, which we will, I guarantee you their market share will go down then too. I guarantee it. It's all
favorite automakers
have
been bringing in. Who brought in the Chevrolet Aveo? Where is that made? Where are these? You know, you're making it sound as if these it's the American heartland versus the foreigners. Who has been outsourcing?
No. I'm not making that point. Because I admire GM and Ford's international operations, and they're going to be bringing stuff in here too. But all I'm saying is, it's not like all of a sudden we just lost the share. Go and push all the imports out and see what we have. Go look at how many imports there are in the Korean market. Look at how many imports there are in the Japanese market. They're closed markets. Wake up. They don't compete like we do.
Where's the Honda Accord made?
It's made all over the world.
Yes. And
where's
by the way, Japanese
okay,
import, Japanese imports are at their highest of all time right now. They build a lot of them in America. Good for them. We asked them to. But the imports are greater than they've ever been. We love the fact we have an open market. An open market's cool. And you know who it's cool for? It's cool for the consumer. They get a shop. It would be nice, and I don't want to sound like Ron Gettelfinger or Buzz Hargrove from the CAW,
who's
now retired.
Luenza, anyway.
Yeah, it's influenza.
Luenza, right.
It would be nice if you want to get on a trade talk sooner or later, and we talk about fairness, because there is some unfairness out there. I did trade missions to Korea and Japan. The Korean market is completely closed. You still get audited if you have a foreign vehicle, whether that be a U.S. vehicle.
Tax audited.
Tax audited, or a German vehicle if you have a Mercedes-Benz. And Japan has never been open, and the automakers...
Even in China. If you go to China, you have to form a joint venture
50,
with a Chinese
50.
Company. No, 51 Chinese.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, and look, I'm a free trader. I say open it up and let the best company win. But when you say, oh, we've lost all this market share, you know why Japan hasn't lost any? There is not one foreign plant in Japan. Not one. And not for lack of trying. You just can't go in there. Same with Korea.
What does America
you
make?
What
does America make for the Japanese market that could compete in Japan?
I got one vehicle for my old friends at Chrysler, the Jeep Wrangler, which is an international vehicle and is loved and revered the worldwide. And I got to believe the number one reason that Sergio at Fiat bought into Chrysler.
It's a niche product.
It's a wonder that sales were up like 100% last month. Because
it's a niche product.
Let's just discount everything I say. Here's a vehicle that has stood for something for 60 years and continues to bring profit and cut across gender,
profit?
Race,
where's the profit?
Age, Huh?
What's the profit on a Jeep Wrangler? I'm interested. Do you know?
Actually, right now, I wouldn't have any clue, would I? Because I'm
there is no
the
profit.
Company.
The company's bankrupt.
But I do know that in 1991, when the market wasn't very good, Jeep made $1.1 billion and Chrysler lost $100 million. So Jeep made it all. Jeep is a wonderful brand going forward, and everybody wants it. Everybody is salivating to get their hands on Jeep.
Do any of you guys ever buy a Jeep?
Are you kidding me? I've had six.
Which ones?
I've had the when Chrysler bought AMC, I had a Wrangler, a soft top. My last Jeep vehicle was a four-door Wrangler, which I think is one of the greatest vehicles in the history of mankind. I had a Commander. I'm glad they're getting
okay. Enough
that.
Jeep stuff. I want to get into some of the stuff that viewers have sent into us during this week. We're calling it rapid fire. Ben, roll the graphic. Okay, Jason, you get to ask the questions, and then we can jump in and answer. And we're going to do this for about the next 10 minutes or so.
Okay, this is. Do we have a 30-second one, a 2-minute, and a 1-minute?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this for 1 minute. How in the world will GM unload all the Pontiac inventory? Will there be a fire sale?
Okay, Robert, you got that one.
There already is, and they'll do it to the fleets.
We still got time to go. How are they going to get rid of it, Peter?
Just naturally. I mean, the enthusiasts will grab what they like, and then they'll just, over the next year, they'll just get rid of it.
Yeah, I like the Pontiac G8. Anybody out there who likes it, now's the time buy it. Or wait another month or two when they're really panicking.
And how much discounts are you think you're going to see on a $38,000 vehicle, a G8?
It's already on sale for $26,000, brand new.
You're not going to see a whole lot right now, but, you know, the closer Pontiac gets to total death, you're going to see some screaming deals. Because, like I said, they don't disassemble.
Nobody wants them.
Say that again?
Because nobody wants them. That's why there's a screaming deal.
You watch. Every single one of those cars are going to get sold.
Yeah, right. A lot of profit there.
Okay. Well, now it's Pontiac. You're right. This person is right. Is there a fire sale? Yeah, my son drives a G6. Loves a car.
Okay.
Too bad. All right. We're out of time on that one. Daimler gives up its stake in Chrysler. What will happen to the Sprinter van and other blended platforms like the 300 Magnum?
Okay,
we can do this in 1 minute, too.
You answer that, Jason.
The 300 Magnum is not a blended platform with Daimler. Daimler gave Chrysler some engineering help on the rear suspension, and that's it. There's no shared parts that they could not have an ability to get. It depends now whether there is a 300 and a Charger going forward. If Chrysler goes away as far as a brand... The Sprinter van, that's a great question. I don't know where that goes. It's done very well in the market, by the way. It's a fabulous vehicle.
It's a really cool vehicle.
And I was
They don't sell a whole lot, though.
No, and
they're expensive.
When I was at Ford, we were trying to get the Transit over here and saying, why don't we have that? As we drove around as executives in Europe going, what a great vehicle. Now they're going to bring the Transit over, I believe.
No, Transit Connect, I think you're right. I think they are talking about the full Transit.
It's a fabulous vehicle for UPS, FedEx, and so forth.
Okay.
And we're out of gas. American Axle closing down Detroit factory and moving operations to Mexico. Discuss.
Put that up for a minute then, I guess.
That's 1 minute.
Well, look, I mean, what, you know, American Axle, Dick Dauch has come out and said is, my labor costs are still the highest in Detroit compared to anywhere. You know, we can go to Three Rivers, Michigan, or we can go to Mexico. And by the way, he points out, and this is something that the UAW still hasn't come to the party on, Dauch is saying in some of his operations in Detroit, he has 30% absenteeism daily. 30%. This is totally unacceptable. I can't believe that the union puts up with this for one iota. So anyway, that's my two cents on it.
Okay, let's go on to something else.
Okay.
Oh, do I get a chance?
Yeah, go. Of course, go.
Yeah, 30 seconds.
Yeah, very simply, I think the UAW is a dinosaur and is a cancer.
Okay. No, come on, tell us how you really feel.
Next question. We don't have to let that run out.
Oh, yes, we do. It's part of the game plan here.
No.
The suggestion for renaming of General Motors, a topic over the last couple of shows. Here's a suggestion.
American Leyland.
No. WTP, We the People Auto Manufacturers. Seems fair since the funds that are going to be used for the foreseeable futures are coming from the American taxpayer. We didn't. You weren't on the shows, Robert. Well, would you keep the name General Motors as the company?
There is no General Motors. They're brands. You got it. There's Chevy and Cadillac, so you might as well call Chevrolet or Cadillac. I don't know. General Motors doesn't exist in the consumer's mind, so it doesn't matter.
I disagree. That's why they're getting hammered right now, because General Motors is in the view with bankruptcy and so forth, and that's why they're hurting their sales.
Seriously, so they're going to hide?
Wait,
hide under their name.
Seriously.
There's an American thing to do.
All right, wait, seriously. Would you, as GM, let's say they get a deal, move forward, would you rename the company from General Motors to something else that we've been exploring for the last couple of weeks?
You guys, you're fiddling while Rome burns. What possible difference, except to people don't buy General Motors. They buy a brand, a Chevy, Cadillac, no longer Pontiac, no longer Saturn, no longer Hummer, no longer Saab. So it doesn't matter what you call General Motors. It's a general mess up. I don't know. Who cares? What difference does it make? I'm confused.
Well, it does actually, in big boy talk, make a difference what you call them.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Well, you started off this answer with a shot at us, at you guys. It starts off, you guys, you guys.
Next question.
How will the UAW treat Ford? Will the UAW be enriched as an organization if Ford is weakened or out of business?
Huh?
Yeah, well, I don't see Ford going out of business. And no. Yeah, let's go to another question. I don't think that's a very good question.
If the UAW and the feds are receiving stock for concessions, are they receiving special stock at a bankruptcy judge that a bankruptcy judge could wipe out?
That's actually a good question. I'll jump in on that one. And I don't think that's been entirely resolved yet. You know, they're going to give stock to the union and stock to the bondholders and stock to the banks, and then a bankruptcy judge could go, voila, it's not worth anything anymore.
Thank God that we have judges who are independent from the politicians who are running this travesty. They're the last bastion of the rule of law in this country, and I hope to God that they actually do enforce actual contractual law that the United States was based on.
Yeah, well, they're not going to. That's just the reality. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Who's the cynic here? Who's the cynic here? Jeez.
I'm a realist.
Ugh, that's what you call it. Okay.
Okay. Next one.
Can you define your criteria for thumbs up, thumbs down evaluation of brands from the different auto manufacturers? As I listened to the evaluation of GM and Ford and Chrysler brands, I thought your comments were based on economic viability. However, your comments on the Toyota brand seem to be based on your opinion of the vehicles, not its ability to emerge intact from its current economic quagmire.
Let's move on. That's so pathetic.
Well, I was, you know, we've been rating the brands with a thumbs up or a thumbs down. The criteria is whatever we think.
Yeah.
Is it good or is it bad? You know, we're not, you know, going through these criteria and filling out forms and looking at viability. We're just going with our own gut feel.
And have they lived up to what they promised? For instance, some of us crapped on, I don't think I was the one on the Scion brand.
Right.
And you guys, I think, were pretty negative on it.
Yeah.
And they haven't lived up to it.
I agree. Scion was a complete mistake from Toyota. Okay. Big mistake.
All right. We have run out of gas or close to it on our quick
wrap. Yeah, we're at the top of the hour. So, Robert, thank you for coming in and sticking with us and sticking it to us.
You almost lost me, man. Just that close to going. But Peter and I, you know, over a beer, we'd probably hate each other even more.
I think you got that right.
No, I don't hate him. I'm kidding. I don't hate it. I don't wish. No. Peter, I thank you for allowing me to come on the program. I appreciate it.
Hey, Robert, it's John's program. Glad you could be here.
Yeah, and again, you know, anybody who wants to follow us, you can go to twitter.com/autoline. If you want to follow Auto Extremists, go to twitter.com/autoextremists. And Robert, you can follow at twitter.com/TTAC, TTAC as he calls it. But Robert, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
And Jason and Peter, thank you guys, too.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutolineDetroit.tv.